Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's season 8, episode 26. And Dave, it's Wednesday, and it feels like it's been a million years since the Steelers played the Bears because the story, to many people's chagrin, has not been at all about the Steelers and the Bears or anything really that happened in week 3 of the NFL. It's been about the situation and players taking action and owners taking action and everybody's reaction to the action taken and the president's reaction and, you know, the president getting this ball rolling really back on Friday. So it's been a topic. We opened with it on Monday. We talked about it about 20-25 minutes. And of course, we've got a lot of new information since we spoke Monday morning, with Ben speaking, with Cam speaking, with Ali speaking. And then with the Mike Tomlin press conference, where he was asked for the first 20 minutes of the press conference. So here we are. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. It's been a crazy couple of days here, you know, for sure. And yeah, I told my wife, I said, boy, did I never imagine going into this, into this last weekend that I'd be busy writing and talking about some of the things I'm writing and talking about. It's not my favorite thing to do, obviously. But, and look, I mean, you and I said in that last podcast, you know, we have to talk about it. We still receive some nasty emails and people wondering, you know, stick to sports and all like this. Look, when it crosses over like this, we have no choice. I mean, we can't bury our, you know, when the team that we cover and talk about, three times a week is involved in something like this, we have no choice but to talk about
it. Steelers were the lead story on CNN. I mean, you know, this is no longer just a football story. And by the way, the Steelers, for better or worse, in trying to be apolitical, because of the Villanueva situation, that which we discussed at length, they became the spotlight story. You know, the Seahawks protested to stay in the locker room. I don't know what the Titans' reason was for staying in the locker room, but the Steelers were trying to be apolitical. But they had an Army Ranger on there, and he was apart from the team, so it became the national story. It's the Steelers, and they in trying to avoid the spotlight, it got shown on them white hot light.
Much like you had said, I think on and look, several of the questions that I asked sort of on the show, what was the team behind them in the tunnel? You know, because they're all you could hear was they were in the locker room, this, that, and the other. A lot of those questions I think have been answered now, David. And I think still one thing that you had said during the show on Monday rings true still. Whatever their plan was, much like what happened in the game, the execution was absolutely horrible. And that poor execution, look, they still were going to be probably a big story had all of them just stood right there in the tunnel. But the fact that, you know, the things happened, transpired the way they did with, you know, how people coming off the field with the flag, and then all of a sudden, Alejandro Villanueva. That's one hell of a coincidence. But, you know, I'll tell you this. The more I heard Villanueva talk about it and hearing Tom, and I do reason to believe that the intention was for them to stand, you know, really in a spot where all of them could see or those who wanted to see the national anthem and participate could, but just far enough out of shot that it would seem like they were making some sort of a statement on top of it. I think Alejandro Villanueva described it best when he was talking to the media. And for those people that think, and look, I love Britt McHenry. I really have liked a lot of her work over the years. I chat with her now and again, even today on direct message. She was really off the mark in saying that she thought Villanueva was pushed out to do his press conference by the organization to kind of cover things up. Here's the nut and bolts. I and we're not going to spend much more time on this. I think you're right. Execution was bad, and oh, was it bad. And I think instead of – I was still a little bit confused when Cam Hayward and Ben Roethlisberger were sent out first on Monday to talk. I understand why they were, but it still didn't look like they had all their I's dotted and T's crossed even then after another team meeting Monday morning. I felt a lot more informed, I guess you will, when Villanueva talked, not long after that. And then, of course, Tomlin's press conference on Tuesday, I think, capped it all real good. So after today, hopefully, of course, Art Rooney II released a statement as well. Hopefully, after today, we're not going to have to spend much more time on this.
Right. So my take on all of this, Ben and Cam speaking, they just didn't make it very clear in the quotes as they came out. They didn't make it clear that Al had asked to be up front or that they asked Al to be up front, however that went down. That Al got separated from the team just seems a coincidence beyond coincidences in how they said it with the flag coming in. The fact that Al didn't look around to find out where his teammates were when things started, and all of a sudden, as soon as a note hits, everybody has to, it's like playing Simon Says, everybody has to freeze. All of that stuff, it just sounds bad. Having said that, what you said about Al's speech, Al's statement at the podium and answering the questions, I 100% I'm with you. I believe it was 100% genuine, that I think he was embarrassed, that he didn't mean to do it like that. Now, look, these are Dave and my opinions, and people can disagree. And it also comes back to Al's point that, not everybody in the world is chuffed off that that players are doing kneeling, sitting, or, using this as a form of protest. Al Villanueva doesn't see it as unpatriotic or disrespecting the flag. Now, I know a lot of people do, and you're absolutely, everybody's allowed to have their own opinion. That's the whole point of all of this. You're allowed to have your own view. But respect the fact that a guy like Al Villanueva isn't upset about it and understands that the protests are about something else. Now, I hear everybody say to me on Twitter, I'll tell you, and I will say this very clearly, that, the people who disagree with me almost universally seem to be white. Now, we can decide that this is a race issue or not a race issue. Certainly race plays a part in all of this, and it's the third rail. It is the, most controversial topic in society when you get into these things, and that's not what our podcast is about. But the guys who are protesting are not protesting veterans and the flag. Now, you may think that's what it represents, and that's fine if you think that, but that's not what they're doing. You may not like how they're doing it, but if Al can respect it, and a lot of other veterans that we get on our Twitter feed can respect it, I get it if you don't. But let's not confuse what the issue is they're trying to shine the spotlight on. I realize you may not like the venue they chose, but you know what? Most of these guys, if they don't choose this venue, they don't have a chance of anybody paying attention to them. This is the only time in their life that anybody's going to pay attention to them, and it's because they play in the National Football League. That's why it was chosen. I get it if you don't agree with it, but it is their chance. And, you look through history and say, some people say most Americans don't support it. You know what? Most Americans didn't support Martin Luther King's speech, and most Americans didn't do this or didn't do that. And you go through different societies through history. When you want reform and you want change, and you want change to change what the majority is doing by the minority, then most people don't want change. So, it doesn't matter to me if you agree with me. It doesn't matter to Dave if you agree with Dave. I think if we're going to talk about it, let's try and talk about the issues that are out there. Okay, Dave, I've said my piece. If you want to add anything, fire away.
Yeah, I'd like to add something. Why the hell did ESPN fire you? I mean, really, bravo. That's why you're good at what you do, David. I mean, I think people look at you and your track record, and especially when it comes to this statement on top, this subject on top of it, is you try to take in both sides of it, and then you present the facts. And I think a lot of people out there, not necessarily people listening to the podcast, but I'm sure there's a large group of them, haven't heard all sides of the story. I think a lot of them were predetermined kind of decisions, and that's why I asked the questions that I asked during the podcast on Monday, you know. And I think a lot of people, if they give it a, you know, probably not going to change. You know what caught me is I put up on my Twitter feed how many people's minds have been kind of, you know, original thoughts have changed in the last, what was it, 24 to 30 hours after the game. And I was impressed that I think, I don't know what, 25 to 35% said, yeah, they're, you know, after Al had spoken and after all the things that transpired on Wednesday, they actually kind of had a change of opinion. Now, what side they went from to what other side, I don't know. But, you know, I think the biggest thing here that people need to do is make sure you listen to the press conference that Ben and Cam Hayward had. You listen to the press conference that Alejandro Villanueva had. And then you listen to Mike Tomlin's press conference that he had on Tuesday. And then, of course, read the statement written by Art Rooney II. If you still want to think what you want to think or what you originally thought from there, great, fantastic. But I think at least fans need to owe it to themselves and really the general public, which is not going to happen, need to do all those things because it's always great to be as well informed as possible as you can on a subject especially like this. But bravo to you, David. I know a lot of people miss you on the radio, and I think that's the way that you just delivered is the main reason why.
Well, it's very kind of you. Thank you. All right, so let's get into this, and let's just I'll just add one thing. The Tomlin presser, if you heard it, the first 20 minutes, I guess there was a reporter from CNN there who I thought did an excellent job of pursuing his line of questioning with Mike without being a jerk. And at the end, you know, I think Mike recognized that he was trying to do his job, and he acknowledged that, and he stood there and he answered the questions. I think Mike Tomlin shone as a man as much as I've ever seen. Not many people get an opportunity to be given, you know, you have to have a chance to be great. And again, people aren't going to agree with me on this, but Mike, in terms of being a man and standing up for what he thinks and standing up for what he thinks is right for the organization and his players, I thought he was fantastic in the pregame Sunday. I thought he was very good in the postgame Sunday, and I thought he was excellent on Tuesday. It didn't go the way they wanted to go. They made mistakes. They acknowledged they made mistakes. Mike told people what he thought and why he thought it. Again, you don't have to agree with him, but I thought he was excellent. Okay, David.
Okay,
Andrew. We got John Eisenberg coming up. It is Wednesday. We're going to have our Raiders beat writer, John Eisenberg, a regular guest of the show, who's a good friend of Dave and ours. And so he'll be with us for the last 25 minutes. So you'll get football there. So, Dave, tell me what you think the injury report is like right now and what the status is going to be without us having seen anything.
Yeah, and let's just say right now it's officially week four. It's officially Ravens week. So let's start acting accordingly here. Okay, Mike Tomlin did indeed. Boy, it took a while to get to it, but I think Ed Bouchette finally said, "Hey, what's up with the injuries this week?" And Mike Tomlin said, "You know, got a number of guys that they're watching and managing. Safety Sean Davis with an ankle. Mike Mitchell with a hamstring strain of some description." Boy, that some description will get you all the time. He suffered that at the end of the football game against the Bears. We'll monitor him at the early portions of the week. Jesse James has a shoulder. He'll be monitored, of course. And let's see, who else did he say? He says those guys who have been out were optimistic about their inclusion, whether it's Stephon Tuitt or T.J. Watt. But just like the first ones I mentioned, their participation and the quality of the participation throughout the week will ultimately determine their availability. Now, Tomlin was not asked about Ramon Foster, who exited that game against the Bears with a thumb injury, nor was he asked about Chris Hubbard, who missed the game with a hamstring injury. Now, the team did release Jake Rogers from the practice squad on Tuesday.
Right.
I think you can read a little something into that maybe when it comes to Marcus Gilbert.
I agree that very, very much I was surprised. And because it's also why am I drawing a blank? The kid from LSU whose knee's been banged up.
Hawkins.
Gerald Hawkins has been banged up. So the fact that they released an offensive lineman from the practice squad, I think, speaks to the fact that, you know, some of these guys aren't seriously injured, you know, in the group of four that we have dinged up, which is obviously Gilbert, you know, Foster, Hubbard, and Hawkins. So, you know, some of those guys, and I don't think they're counting on Hawkins. So that means, you know, the other three, I would imagine a couple of those guys are going to be able to go.
Yeah, Hubbard's not banged up.
Oh, I thought you said he had his hamstring strained there.
No. Mitchell and Davis. Davis has the ankle. Mitchell has a hamstring strain. So you got a couple of safeties there. Then you have Watt and Tuitt, obviously, and then Jesse James with his shoulder as well. The key names on this list, I think, this week are Mitchell and Davis. Now, Mitchell. He finished out that game, right?
And Foster, right?
Right, and I said Foster with the thumb. Yeah, that Mike Tomlin was not asked about him.
Yeah.
That he's going to be a guy to watch. Here's the thing. Mike Mitchell has yet to miss a game so far during his Steelers career. So we'll see what happens there. Sean Davis in that ankle, being as how he try to go back in and had to come back out?
I think he did. I think he did go back in. Yes.
He didn't finish, so that's not a good sign there. But I mean, we'll see where practice, which way practice goes here. Being that Jesse James returned to that game with a shoulder injury, unless they found something afterwards, I kind of think he plays. So I guess what I'm trying to say is the guys that I'm most concerned about as we sit here on Wednesday would be maybe Sean Davis and Ramon Foster would be the two guys I'm most concerned about right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. Those would be the two I'd be most concerned with. And there's some people.
And obviously with Watt. I mean, I think Tuitt returns this week. I will be surprised if Tuitt does not play this week. Watt, I mean, with the groin, you know me and groins. I don't like to speculate.
Yeah, right. So, Tuitt, I think people – people who watched practice Thursday and Friday were surprised too it didn't go on Sunday. So you have to think he's going to be good to go. Again, with hamstrings, so with Gilbert and Watt, to me these are 1 to 2. They weren't tears. These strains are generally 1 to 2 week type things. And look, it was the same thing with Tuitt. They were obviously extra cautious in not putting them out there. So maybe with both these guys, they go another week. And we'll see with Foster because, we didn't get any update there. I'm guessing he doesn't have a broken hand because I think they probably would have said that if that were the case. But that's where things are. And go back to the safety situation. J.J. Wilcox was missed a game through the concussion protocol system. He was back. But if you got two dinged up guys, that leaves you only two healthy safeties. We'll see if there's a roster move today. Jordan Dangerfield went to visit Dave. You told you were the one who saw it, who said that you went to see the Lions on Friday. I'm guessing I didn't see that he got signed, so I'm guessing he didn't get signed.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything that says he's gotten signed there. He visited him
Friday.
Late in the week.
Yeah,
late in the week. So if he was going to be signed, that's probably them updating their Rolodex as well, too. If the Steelers are going to make a move, if they're concerned, it'll happen on Saturday, and it would be Jacob Hagan being promoted from the practice squad to the 53-man roster. Now, the team has already once this season played with three safeties, right?
Not the Bears game, the game before that against Minnesota, Wilcox was down.
Right. So what they did is they dressed Brian Allen instead. And of course, William Gay would be your emergency fourth safety. But, if you go in with two banged up safeties, obviously one would probably be down of either Mitchell or Davis if you're in a situation like that. And then the one other one coming off their injury from the game week three makes you kind of wonder if they would still even allow themselves to go in that thin. So, Saturday look out to see if something happens there. Obviously, keep abreast of the day-to-day practice reports. I would expect Mitchell and Sean Davis to not go today. Thursday and Friday were obviously the days to watch there. And this is a game against the Ravens, too. So if these guys think they can make it healthy enough to suit up for this game, they're gonna suit up there. So like I said, the names I'm most concerned about right now would be I think Davis, obviously not knowing much about Watt, and then of course a guy like Foster, just because we don't have an update on him.
Okay, so let's get into If there are more topics, let's get into the press conference, the football aspect of the press conference, and kind of the all 22 and maybe thoughts. I'm going to come back to the thought, since it was late in the show, that, not that we didn't say this Wednesday and Friday, but just seeing some of the stats on Mike Lennon, we have the hindsight of having the game been played. So that affects, the bias of our analysis here. But, we said this going in with no receivers. And, Dave, you pointed it out repeatedly. You said you liked Thompson. Wheaton hadn't played. We're going to see what he could do. It's a nondescript group of five receivers. I mean, really, I'm not sure if any of the five receivers make the Steelers roster. And you've got a quarterback who, he's a journeyman quarterback who has some talent. Look, he beat the Steelers. He's not a bum, but he's not a guy who necessarily is going to single-handedly with that group take his team to victory. It's a little bit surprising that the Steelers didn't do more, particularly early in the game, or weren't more successful. Maybe maybe this was their game plan, but that they were able to be run upon so easily. And it changed in the second half. I think there were only 34 yards by the Bears in the second half. But in overtime, that's the lasting image. And, boy, did they run wild, as you pointed out on Monday.
Boy, why play two deep safeties? Why not make – if you're going to play some – if you're going to play some of this man, okay, make some of these quarterbacks that you're playing – beat you over the top, and then if they're able to get the protection and beat you up over the top on a deep ball, you take your hat off and you hand it to them, because that's a lot of these quarterbacks can't do that. If they do it once, they're probably not going to be able to do it again. So as long as you don't give up the ultimate home run in these situations, I think you're good. And especially with a guy like Glennon. And you said it. Zach Miller. Zach Miller is a decent tight end, but I don't think anybody sets their lineup, their fantasy lineup, and says, "Oh boy, I have Zach Miller in the lineup this week." Kind of thing there. But why aren't you selling? And especially when you're giving up some of those outside zone runs early there, some of them stretch runs. Why aren't you putting more men in the box? Why aren't you having an extra safety down low to help with some of those gaps there? And boy, they got eight alive. And on that show, and I only had the TV tape to go on as well too. David, I get why this is happening. Everybody loves Debo. Okay, I get it. How can you not like Debo? Debo has been great in the run during his career. Debo has been especially fine against being able to set the edge and on outside zone. But with that said, and I said this the other day, people need to stop trying to pin this on Anthony Ciccolo on those runs to the left side of the Bears offense, the right side of the Steelers defense. I thought Ciccolo did fine in setting the edge, and I thought Mike Tomlin really described it best. Now, Mike Tomlin's not going to give you the ultimate who was at fault there,
right?
But he pretty much absolved the outside linebackers. Now,
he said he didn't want to pin it on one guy, and he. I think he got asked about Ciccolo in conjunction with Harrison specifically. And I think, more or less, I think he said this was a group effort. This is, it wasn't I don't know that he absolved him, but he certainly didn't blame him.
Well, he was asked if he thought, if he thought they had problems setting the edge.
Right.
OK, during the game, he says, not consistently, but at times. There's going to be a hole or two from time to time, particularly when you're as well prepared as those guys, and they were. I tip my hat to Coach John Fox and those guys. They had a great plan, so there's going to be a big hole from time to time. Usually those plays are minimized with good tackling. Those are the 6 to 8 to 11-yard gains that you might see in the running game from time to time. He goes on to say, really, our biggest issue in those instances, they were several of those instances, we weren't good tacklers. Well, hello, yeah. Absolutely. Those holes became field flipping plays at 26, 40 yard gains and so forth. So it was a combination of us being a little bit more solid, being a little bit more solid on a perimeter at times, good schematics by them. And those two things occurred. Now remember, to be solid at on a perimeter at times, that involves your defensive backs as well too. And say what you will about a guy like Joe Hayden, for example, getting held on, you know, that second to last run in overtime there, you know, he did allow himself to get in that position where he was giving up the edge though on top of it. So yeah, he was held, but yeah, maybe he needs to do a little bit better job of keeping himself outside and forcing that run back inside to help there. Now Tomlin later on was asked, you know, about Harrison and you know, because of his long history of playing well against the run in the outside zone, he was asked if he gave any thought to using Harrison, you know, in that role Sunday against the Bears, and this is his exact answer. I don't know if it was specifically the outside linebacker position that was viewed as an issue in that football game. And James speaks to the outside linebacker position. Largely, we've got to do a better job of minimizing the run. I'm not going to single out any position, and I think a discussion about his participation or non-participation does that. I don't want to leave perception in any wild directions there. But I mean, when you go and look at the tape, David, I mean, some people saying, boy, Chicklo allows himself to get pushed out of bounds. That's absolutely false. I mean, it is false. When you have a guy on that side, his job is not let that guy get to his outside. Now, could he have maybe was he perfect? No. Could he have maybe done maybe a little bit better job of anchoring against some of those tackle or tight end blocks and thus squeezing the lane a little bit? Sure it could. For people trying to pin this on Chicklo, you need to turn your fingers around and point them to the inside linebackers, the defensive backs, and Keith Butler, because that was your problem. Especially running some of these fire X's on first, you know, some run blitzes, fire X's on first down, and they run an outside zone. You're just asking for it then. Rant over.
Listen, I'm with you. You know, the thing that I'll go back to, one of the things when in talking about the run defense, and again, you know, Mike didn't get asked some of the questions I would have liked to have asked. One was, you know, you teach these guys to play fast and shoot gaps, but a lot of times they're overrunning plays. And, or, you know, look, everybody watches the Steelers knows that Ryan Shazier is the poster boy for this. And I do have, you know, as Dave likes to say, I've got a poster of Shazier in my room, but it does get tiresome to see him, you know, try to arm tackle a guy who's, you know, taking two steps with the ball, who's getting up to speed as he's going by. And you're not going to bring a guy down that way. And that happened a lot. And I thought, you know, for me, in looking at watching the game and then looking at the film, I think, you know, you sometimes you have a confirmation bias when you want to look for something and see it. And I saw it with Chicklo a couple times on that right edge. You know, what's exactly the right thing to do with setting the edge? And would I have thought the same thing if that was Harrison or TJ Watt? I don't know. That's a good question. I thought, like, Chicklo at times got past the ball carrier. And as you pointed out Monday, part of the job is to have that guy turn up field in that outside zone. And then the guy's got to fill in. The backside guy's got to fill in. Look, it's a team effort. And the team effort didn't get it done. But if you really want to put it on somebody, this is one of the times when I might put it on the coaching staff, because of who the opponent was, what their skill position talent was in the situation coming into the game, that, you know, you say, go. I mean, it's not like Miami last year, who ran all over the Steelers, where you say, you know, look, Ryan Tannehill's probably a more accomplished quarterback than Mike Lennon. He started more. They had, you know, a better group of skill guys. It's not completely different, but I think even this one was worse in terms of, you know, pick your poison to beat you, and the Steelers got beat by the only poison that I think the other team was capable of beating them with.
Yeah, and, you know, you hear Keith Butler these days talk about all the time. We have if everybody would just do their job and not try to do too much and try to overcompensate for others maybe not doing their job, you know, things would be a lot better. And I think Chicklo's case – Now, look, I mean, Chico's not going to the Pro Bowl. Do I think he deserves to start over T.J. Watt when he comes back? Absolutely not. But I just think it's just too easy. Look, I mean, if Harrison was in there, would people be standing up and played exactly the same way and the same results happen? Would people be all over Harrison saying he's done? Or would people be saying, oh, no, that's not Harrison's fault? It couldn't have been Harrison's fault. He's so good against the run because of his past history there. So I think you're right. And look, if this was Chickle's fault, I thought he had a lot of blame in it. These guys don't pay me nothing. I would have no issue telling you that it is. But you can't allow the tackle or the tight end to cross your face in those situations on the outside. Because let me tell you, if you let that runner get to the outside, then he might be. Katie bar the doors, Tunchilkin likes to say. Might be home runs all over the place there. Now, there still were a few home runs regardless, but, like I said, he wasn't perfect in the game. Could he have maybe squeezed a little bit more out there on the edge? But rest assured, there are a lot of those lanes over there on that left side of the Bears offense, right side of the Steelers defense, they were lanes. I mean, there was no help coming from the inside. They were either walled off or poor fields or poor angles or what have you there. So, you got to look at that tape. You got to learn from it. You got to move on. It'd be interesting to see if the Ravens are interested in running any kind of staying. Here's the thing about that outside zone too, David, and, you know, that stretch. You know, people forget a lot of those plays didn't go for much yardage that they ran, but you've got to be committed to it, you know, and tip your hat to the Bears because they were committed to it for sure, and they were rewarded because of that commitment to it as well. Now, the Glennon stuff is still pretty much – I told you that the Justin net yards per passing attempt number would still be decent. The Steelers enter week number 4 with the second lowest adjusted net yards per passing attempt in the league. That there should be a damn ticket to tape parade in Pittsburgh right now because of that number. Now, I realize it doesn't tell the whole story, especially the quarterbacks that they faced and of course, getting just demolished by that running game. So, a good start. I think this defense is in a way better starting spot than they were last year at this time as well, too. So, an embarrassing loss. Now, what about offense? What did you think about Ben Roethlisberger's radio comments yesterday?
Well, that was Ben got it right, and it was what you pointed out at Monday. We've talked about it before. He said, you know, look, over time, because he's so good, and sometimes when things aren't going well, I look to AB and I lock on AB. And you talked about that third down sack in particular, where the Steelers, you know, where I think it was four down territory, and he missed Eli over the middle on a short. Actually, Eli sat down on a cross, shallow cross, and Jesse Rogers ran a seam, and he, you know, Ben ends up keying on AB, and he ends up getting sacked. And it takes him out of field goal range, you know, potentially a game-winning situation. Look, the fact that he said it, he acknowledged it, he said he needs to play better. I don't have anything to add because everything he said, he's 100% right. And again, you know, we talk about when we're critical of Ben. Look, Ben's, I think, 11th in the NFL in passer rating. He's 13th in QBR. The Steelers have not played particularly dynamic teams the first 3 weeks. I mean, look, the Browns and the Vikings, both the Vikings have very good corners and a credit. Those guys played well against the Steelers. But look, it was in Pittsburgh. The Steelers offense hasn't been anything close to what we expect. And it's, if we're going to give all the praise and call this a quarterback-driven league, a lot of the blame is going to be shouldered when the quarterback doesn't get it done. And to this point, again, as somebody said to me, well, look at the other quarterbacks in the league. I don't evaluate Ben Roethlisberger against the other quarterbacks in the league. I evaluate Ben Roethlisberger against Ben Roethlisberger and what the expectations for him are. And versus the expectations for Ben, he has not been good.
Yeah, and I think there has been instances where he's keying in a little bit too much on AB. He said as much during that radio interview. You know, and he also said, look, and as you would expect him to do, he expects this offense to finally find their gear here pretty soon. I think, David, and look, I mean, we talked a lot about prior to that game against the Bears about Mike Glennon on third and long situations there, right? And how third, I think it was third and six was the number, you know, get him in those situations. And by the way, Mike Glennon, when they got him in those situations, was not good. I mean, didn't take Nostradamus to kind of come up with that one, though, I don't think. The stats really didn't lie in that situation there. But, you know, so far this season, you know, the Steelers offense just, you know, they have faced 37 third downs so far this season, and they've converted just 12 of them. Now, you look at that 32.43% conversion rate, and you're thinking, oh, man, stinkorama, and with good reason, because it does stink. Now, here's the thing that I think a lot of people will find surprising, at least I did as well when I started to pull the numbers here. 21 of those 37 third down attempts so far this season, David, 56.8% needed 7 or more yards to go. Now, entering week 4 of the National Football League regular season, that 56.8% is the 6th highest in the league when you look at 3rd and 7 or longer situations there. So this offense has got to stop getting himself in so many third and seven and mores. And when you think about it, you have 2 plays to get 4 yards. It doesn't sound that hard, does it?
But no.
When you have a couple of penalties, which has been the case. I went back and researched all 21 of these third downs and what happened on the plays prior to them. You have one of them you can throw out because it happened in a kneel down succession. So we're dealing with 20 actual third and 7 or longer. 2 other third down and longs were set up by penalties, either on first or second down. 1 other was because of a result of a sack. 7 other third longs came after first down run fails that were followed up by either another run fail or an incompleted short pass on second down. 2 other third and longs included failed runs on first down, followed by, wait for it, an incomplete deep pass on second down. And on 1 other third down long, it was set up to back-to-back incomplete deep passes on first and second down. And I don't think many of our listeners forget what series and what team that was against so far this season and when that happened. I'm not going to go through the remaining combinations here. But here's the thing. I think they need to get Ben back into a little bit more of a rhythm on some early downs, especially early in the game. Start off with let's run a little bit of power. You know, we just got done talking about the Bears running that outside zone. We don't see the Steelers run a lot of outside zone during a game. And when you have an offensive line and a running back that's not really tearing it up, getting yards, why not try to stretch out a defense a little bit and try to open up some lanes? So I personally like to see a little bit of maybe outside zone run some early against the Baltimore Ravens there. I'd like to see them try to commit to running a little bit on first down. If not, I'd like to see some quick bubble screens maybe to A. Be as some run game alternatives, but let's start seeing this offense get 4 yards combined or more on first or second down. Because here's something that David that a lot of people probably don't realize: on those 16 third down plays the Steelers have run so far this year, needing 6 or fewer yards, the offense has converted 10 of them. 10 of 16 is 62.5%, and that rate is at 8th best in the NFL right now. So just keep yourself out of third and 7 or long situations, and I think that's going to change a lot of stuff. Now, it's easy to put that out there, just stay out of third and longs, but I think that's something to track starting this week in Baltimore.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, you talk about the calls, the play calls on first and second down, how you set that stuff up, being ahead of the chains, and it comes back to just being effective in the running game. The Steelers only ran the ball with Lev 15 times in this one. As we've talked about, the yards per carry, you know, we're fine as you look at it, but it just the running game wasn't particularly effective. And we only saw those drives at the end of the half with the shallow crosses and mixing in the running game where they had a balanced offense. But that's really the only time they moved the ball effectively. And, Dave, I guess the one thing that we haven't seen much of is kind of the up-tempo, the hurry-up offense that it seems to me that the Steelers do better. Look, it's not an offense you want to run the entire game, tire your own guys out and the situations that you face. But to me, I'd like to see a little bit more of that this week against Baltimore and see where they get going. And they've got to get – look, zero targets to Eli Rogers is unacceptable because Eli Rogers is working the middle of the field. Jesse James, not a lot of targets in the middle of the field for him either. You know, the shots to Martavis and Juju were generally on the outside. They've got to start working the middle of the field, and that's going to open things up for AB some more. We all expect better. There's no other way to put it. This group of people, this group of individuals, the talent level they have, it's been disappointing so far this season in all three games. They have not played well. They've not played up to expectations in any of the three games.
Yeah, and look, I mean, if you're lining up on first and 10 and you don't like the front that you see and you have a run play called, you know, check out of that. Get the ball in Le'Veon Bell's hands out of the backfield in some way. How many times do you see Le'Veon Bell catch the ball out of the backfield and actually lose yardage? Up until this year, you could usually say the same about the run with him, but he has had some negative first and 10 carries this year. Make it more manageable at least to start the game. Now, as far as the hurry-up offense goes with the cadence and being on the road early in the game, I don't know how easy that's going to be able to do with the communication and all like that. I understand why people want to do that. And I tell you another thing I don't think we've seen a lot of so far is play action by Ben, you know, especially in situations when I think defenses think that the Steelers are going to run there. Maybe a little bit more of that as well, too, there. But I think you just go back to using the KISS theory right here. Keep it simple, stupid, until this offense kind of gets back on track. I mean, they've obviously got the weapons. Their offensive line, they have the talent there. Le'Veon Bell's still the same Le'Veon Bell. He's just not having the same kind of creases or whatnot to run through. And people look at it and say, well, they're judging it by results. They're not judging it by what the tape says. They're saying, well, he's only averaging X amount of yards per carry. That means he's not hitting the hole good enough. It means he's still not in tune. Honestly, I'm not seeing it. And he had a better game against the Bears. The problem was he had two carries, David, of his for 16 yards called back for penalties, okay? Additionally...
And we talked about the one by Hubbard in the last drive. To me, that it's a completely overlooked play in the game, and it was as important as any of them. Because when you're first and 20, with that kind of time left, you don't want to make a mistake back there. You got to be a little bit more conservative, where if you're second and two out around the 40 – You're looking to win. Go win the game.
Right, and you know, two successful nice plays called back by penalties. Only 15 carries in the game, and 7 of those 15 are what we would deem successful runs. So it's making progress there. They just didn't, volume of runs, as Mike Tomlin said during the Tuesday press conference, wasn't there. I'm not ready to throw up the white flag just yet. I think if they get Ben kind of back in a rhythm here, look, if you have a run fail or a incomplete pass on first down, don't try to get it all back on second down. Don't throw deep, down the field, get it all back. Try to get yourself 4 or 5 yards and go from there. The problem is when you get in these third and long situations here, defenses, A, they're going to guard those sticks, and B, Ben hates getting off the field on third down without giving himself a chance, and that's why you see him try to go deep so many times. Bless his heart. Because if he wasn't, we'd be calling him a giant Alex Smith,
Okay, so let's – because we got John Eisenberg coming in, we're well past the hour mark here. Positives, we mentioned Antonio Brown, And I think you hit on the guy on defense who you might say some positive things about, and that's Javon Hargrave.
Boy, you look great. Matthew Marks, he's got some great tape, great film breakdown up on him today, and you're right. If there's one guy that should be on the winner's list of the defense, it's probably Javon Hargrave, and the list probably stops there as far as the defense goes.
Anything else from, Martavis Bryant, kind of recognizing maybe he should have caught that first ball. Any other takeaway from Tomlin or kind of the little bit of sound we heard out of the locker room?
Yeah, not really. This was a classic Steelers stinker against a team with a losing record on the road that they should have won. I mean, they play them 9 more times. How many times do they win that game?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, you certainly think they win 8 out of 10, and with everything that happened, they still had a chance to win the game late. And I think that maybe was the most disheartening thing, is they came back in the second half and did some things right. They got the game tied, and then they had the ball, and they didn't sniff it. I mean, Mike pointed out that Mitchell could have made the interception, or she even should. Well, Mike pointed it out, sounded like he should have. A fumble can go anywhere. Pretty hard to blame J.J. Wilcox for not recovering the fumble, but he was there. Glennon picks up his own fumble in the next play. They don't get any of those, but they get the ball back. And, you get the penalty by Hubbard. It's a game where, like, you felt like, you can wash away most of the sins. And there would be a lot of people still screaming and yelling about the game if they had won. But rightly so. They're even more so because of they lost and because of how embarrassingly they got run on in the OT, which took us back to what happened in the first half. If you didn't get to see if there wasn't going to be an OT, you'd say, okay, they fixed the defense in the second half. But clearly they didn't fix it enough.
5 plays. That's what we always say, right?
Yeah.
And there's certainly 5 that you can circle in that game there. Look, I got to admit, David, as bad as that game started, even in the second half there, at no point did I think that they weren't going to win that game. I got to be honest with you. I didn't think they were going to, lose that game. At no point did I think in that second half, Did I really think that they were going to lose that game? I thought they were still going to win it.
Yeah, so did I. Okay, well, we're going to come back. We're going to come back, but we actually did this yesterday, so we're going to take you to our conversation because we had a scheduling conflict with our buddy from Ravens.com, John Eisenberg. Okay, it is the Terrible Podcast, and of course it's Ravens week, and with some scheduling conflicts, as we mentioned up top, we had a chance to talk to our buddy John Eisenberg, columnist for the Baltimore Ravens. John, a longtime guest of the show, and because of the scheduling conflict, we're having our conversation Tuesday afternoon, where basically all hell has broken loose over the NFL the last 48 hours. And you can follow John as usual on Twitter at Bmore, B-M-O-R-E, Eisenberg, his last name, E-I-S-E-N-B-E-R-G. John's written a ton of books. The most recent one is on Cal Ripken and The Streak, which was published in July. John, as always, it's great to have you back on the show. And, the narrative around the NFL is a little different than our normal topic of conversation.
Well, that's for sure. What a week. It is something. I think we'll be kind of fun just to play a little football on Sunday.
Yeah, and we've gone through this a fair bit, and we like to have our guests on and talk football. So we'll kind of stick to the knitting on that. And let's just kind of start with the expectations of the Ravens coming into the season. We've talked about this team, and I know the past couple of years have been a little bit disappointing. The question about Joe Flacco and what their capabilities are offensively. But defensively, kind of some good feelings about where they were, maybe how the draft went, and a good start to the season, and obviously, a little bit different on the trip overseas this past week.
Yeah, I mean, what will be interesting to see going forward is if that is one of those games, and we've all seen it, that you just throw it out for whatever reason. I can guarantee you the Ravens, they could play the Jacksonville Jaguars 20 times. It would not be given up 44 points again, probably, like in the first 3 quarters. It was just a complete dusting. And this is a defense that had played pretty very well as any defense in the league the first 2 weeks. So it's got some nice players there. And so it's just will be interesting to see how they react, because the Ravens have put a lot of time, energy, draft picks, free agent dollars, everything into improving their defense. And they were feeling real good about it. And, you know, this just blows it out of the water entirely when you get picked apart by Blake Bortles. So, you know, it's a real gut check for him. And it will be very interesting to see how they respond.
So, John, let's start with, you know, where we always start with the offense and Joe Flacco. Look, this is a coaching staff with John Harbaugh, Marty Mornwig, Dean Pease. They've been around. We're familiar with them. We know there have been changes with the offensive coordinator over the years with Baltimore. But Joe Flacco has been there forever. Didn't play in the preseason. Obviously didn't play well against Jacksonville. Where is Joe Flacco in the picture of NFL quarterbacks and in the picture of Joe Flacco's career in your mind?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question, because he didn't play at all in the preseason. As you said, he's dealing with a bad back. He has said he's not 100%. He said that, I'm trying to think when he actually issued that statement, and it was after the week one. And so we didn't really talk about it after week two. He said he was fine. Looked real good in week two. They played Cleveland. They had a nice game plan, a lot of sort of short routes, moving the chains, you know, a lot of play action. He was very sharp, very on target with his throwing, and looked good. And it just seemed like, well, that whole back thing, which pretty much engulfed Baltimore in preseason, seemed to be a story of the past. But then on Sunday, he did look stiff, I thought, and it's as bad as he's played. I mean, there was just nothing there. He was not accurate. His mechanics weren't good. There was no downfield passing game at all. Now, you know, they're dealing with other issues on the offensive side, which we can get into. So as has often been the case, maybe not a ton of help, but you know, I wrote on the Ravens website, I said, you cannot give Joe Flacco a pass on this game. I mean, you know, they needed him to step up. It just wasn't there at all. So, somebody that is under a lot of scrutiny, I think. You know, he certainly needs to be better. You look at the quarterback rating statistics, he's at the bottom 2-3. You know, that's just not good enough.
John, when you talk about Flacco, I think so far through three games here, something like an average completed air yards of 3.6 yards per attempt, and that's that's low. And when you look at his intended air yards, 6.6, that's not even too far down the field, you know, as well, especially when you consider a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, 10.8 yards down the field. Now, in Ben's case, he's probably taking too many shots down the field there. But how much do you think this has to do with Mornwig, with the receiving core, with the health of the offensive line? I mean, look, I mean, Flacco's not been an overly great deep passing quarterback throughout his career, but he's certainly been above the line, in my opinion. And we just haven't seen it as of late.
Yeah, I think Mornwig is part of the equation here. I mean, he definitely likes that short passing game, West Coast offense, and, you know, move the chains more than take the deep shots. But probably the biggest factor in those bad stats, aside from the lousy game on Sunday, the biggest factor is they really ran the ball a lot in those first two games. The issue here offensively for the whole offseason and going into the season was, can they get back to running the ball decently? Because they were completely out of balance last year. Set a franchise record for most passes, led the league in pass attempts, and set a franchise records for most pass attempts and fewest rushes. Totally out of balance. And so they said, we're going to get back to this. They brought in Greg Roman. And then the first game in Cincinnati, he didn't need to throw the ball. They just ran the ball, and they ran the ball very well against Cincinnati. Week two against Cleveland, they ran the ball a lot as well, and supported that with short passes. So they didn't need him to throw the ball downfield at all in those first two games, really. Now, last week they did. Fell behind. It was a classic situation where, you know, you need some plays, and it just wasn't there. Wasn't there at all. So, you know, I would say circumstances dealt with those low numbers the first 2 weeks. Last week, you know, the line is in very much in flux, a lot of injuries there. and that's not helping him. But, you know, I mean, something has to get. I mean, they have to get better. They've got Mike Wallace. They've got Jeremy Maclin. They got to get those guys involved.
And we saw the Steelers' defense just absolutely get gashed by the Bears' running attack on Sunday there, and a lot of that had to do with that outside zone stretch play. And, you know, there's been past games, while it's been a while ago, we remember a game where the Ravens just crushed the Steelers with the outside zone. Being as how we're talking on Tuesday, I haven't had a lot of chance to go into detail into the Ravens' first three games as far as how much outside zone or stretch they've run so far. Have you seen a lot of it? And, you know, if so or if not, do you expect them to try to duplicate some of the things that the Bears offense did, and, you know, which will probably be hard when you don't have guys like Marshall Yanda in there?
Yeah. They've kind of gotten away from the stretch thing a little bit. You know, that was Gary Kubiak brought that in here. It was extremely effective. And then Gary was gone. And then they've sort of spent the last 2 years sort of in limbo. They brought in Greg Roman. It's a little bit more of a flexible running game now. I mean, they got a little bit of everything. It's a little hard to put your finger on it exactly what is going on there. But I'm certainly not seeing a lot of that outside stretch. But I have seen a lot of creativity until this game this past week. Interesting running game. I mean, definitely some misdirection and some plays that we hadn't seen here in a few years. And the blocking was good. The run blocking was good. So this past week was not good. And, you know, it's very easy to say, well, it's because they're lacking Yanda, and that is a huge factor. There is no question about it. But the guys that are there, you know, some of them have been in the league a while. They ought to be able to do better than they did on Sunday.
John, Terrence West as the back in the offensive line as a unit. We've talked about Yanda being out. Give us kind of an overview of the rest of the offensive line. And who's this kid, the fifth round pick, who looks like he's getting some time at right guard?
Well, at right guard, they're all over the map. I mean, at right guard, a lot of it was Matt Skura, was an undrafted free agent from a year ago. He was seeing time at right guard. Jermaine Illuminor is the fifth round pick. He's the British kid that was had a homecoming from Texas A&M. He was a tackle at Texas A&M. He might play. Right now, I think they're sorting through trying to figure out who the right guard is.
Yeah,
exactly. So remains to be seen on that one.
And the rest of the guys on the line, how have they played? How do you look at the unit as a whole now?
Well, they had a horrible game on Sunday. So, Austin Howard at right tackle had some real nice Pro Football Focus scores the first 2 weeks, played pretty well. They gave him some money, and I think he's solid enough out there at right tackle. Certainly Ronnie Stanley's a very high draft pick in his second season. Has had some ups and downs, but Ryan Stanley with Yanda gone is probably the best guy there, the left tackle. James Hurst at left guard, you know, was a tackle, is another undrafted free agent. So, not sure where they're going with that exactly. And Ryan Jensen, the center, is a former sixth round pick, who's starting after 4 years. He's a big sort of rumbling guy, and he graded very well on Sunday. So, he's doing okay. I mean, you know, they do have some pieces there, some guys that have taken a few years to come together. And that's a big concern here right now, though. Who's the right guard? How's it all going to fit together? Can they play better than they did on Sunday?
The defense, Mike Tomlin spoke Tuesday and talked about the talent on the defensive side of the balls and the ball through the years, what these guys have done. I know Brandon Williams didn't go over to London to play in the game last week, and so we'll see what his status is as the week goes on. But these are names Steeler fans are familiar with. A lot of these guys, Terrell Suggs, C.J. Mosley, high pedigree guys. They turned over the secondary. They went for the undrafted, the guys who were in the free agent market with Tony Jefferson and Eric Weddle, and that seems to have worked out really well. Jimmy Smith's back, Brandon Carr. I mean, this is it's not necessarily a young group, but they went in the draft and they got, you know, the bunch of guys that they did that we've talked about with Humphrey and Bowser and Tim Williams. I mean, it seems like they're doing a nice job of transitioning from young to old. Do you see this as a relatively seamless transition? And, you know, throwing out, as you said at the top, throwing out last week's game, how talented is this group?
Pretty talented. If you're throwing out last week's game, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a pretty good defense. It's quick, agile. There's a blend of youth and experience. I like some of the young players. I mean, you know, Tyus Bowser, second round pick. He, I think, is going to be a three down player in the NFL. I think he will replace Suggs. When Suggs is done, it will be Bowser. And so nice pick there in the second round. And, you know, Matt Judon on the left side, that's like a fifth round pick that's starting for him this year, playing with some energy. Za'Darius Smith's running around. I mean, they got a bunch of young guys. And Tim Williams they put in from Alabama last week, and they think he'll develop into a pass rusher. And the best of them all, honestly, he's not even starting right now. Marlon Humphrey, the first-round pick this year from Alabama, they absolutely love him. And that's something worth watching. That's what a lot of people here are watching. If either of these veteran quarterbacks stumbles, they're going to put that kid in there because they're at this point sort of rotating in now and then. They're giving him some series here and there. And he is a 6'2", fast, agile, press cover. You know, nobody's getting a step on him. Just aggressive. I mean, they love him. And so I don't know how long he's going to sit on the bench, to be honest with you. I think that guy is going to be on the field pretty soon because they feel like maybe he's got the edge that they're looking for. So that's something definitely to watch going forward.
John, is he playing nickel at all, John?
Who? I'm sorry?
I assume he's not playing inside in the nickel and that he's no. Just kind of – he's not getting a lot of snaps right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting 15 snaps. I mean, they put him into that game on Sunday, and Jacksonville just attacked him and really got nowhere. That was like one of the few. He had a very high grade from Pro Football Focus. I mean, he held up. He was one of the few guys that held up. So I don't know. No, they made the decision from the get-go. This is the, you know, going forward, I don't know. I mean, he's young. I mean, he's going to be a starting cornerback there for a long time. And so they said, we're just not going to put him in the slot. I mean, they've had several injuries in the slot. Lardarius Webb is playing the slot. And the first two games were real good, not so great last week. But I think it would be more likely thinking they would put Carr in the slot than Humphrey. I think Humphrey they see as the prototypical modern sort of edge cornerback, and I think he's going to be out there.
John, what is the early word? I know it's Tuesday and you know, first injury report's not due out till Wednesday, but what is the early word on Brandon Williams and his status this week? And additionally, so we see that Brent Urban went down with, I think, a Liz Frank injury in this game against the Jaguars, so he's going to be lost for an extended amount of time. You know, is it going to be Bronson Kafusu? Is it going to be Chris Wormley? I suspect probably both those guys will be active. But, you know, what's the status on the replacement for Urban and Brandon Williams' status this week?
Brandon Williams, I have no information yet. You know, they didn't bring him, as you said, to London. And it was not described to us as a long-term injury. So I think at this point in the week, they're hopeful that he'll be back. That's a big, big thing, obviously, because you know, they gave that guy a lot of money, and the run defense was not nearly as good without him out there on Sunday. So they're hopeful to get him back. As far as Urban, that's a big loss. I mean, he's as a young man and played himself into a starting role, a huge presence inside. They're going to miss him. I think Kafusi is the guy. Who will replace him. He's got, neither of them, because his entire rookie year was lost to injury. So he and Wormley both are basically rookies. You know, John Harbaugh said yesterday, both are ready to go. They kept eight defensive linemen. That was a source of some controversy on cutdown weekend because it was like, why are you doing that? It was more, and the reason they did is they liked them all. Willie Henry, you know, he's the guy that was on the field suddenly on Sunday, fourth round pick from Michigan. They just got a lot of bodies there. And so they kept all these guys because they like them. So what you have to believe from their perspective is that, you know, this is probably the position where they can best afford to to have injuries is the D-line.
Outside of, obviously, you know, the Jaguars offense, I think, being given three short fields in that game, and they converted converted all three of those short fields into touchdowns, if memory serves me there. What else was, could you pinpoint some deficiencies on defense? Is there anything that kind of stuck out after you've gone back through the game where you say, okay, well, you know, outside of the short fields, the Ravens defense didn't do this?
I'd say you could do a checkbox of everything and they didn't do any of it. They didn't. I mean, they didn't cover. They didn't tackle. They just got blown away. That was there was just, the first tackle often did not bring the runner down. There were free runners on the sideline, a lot of them over the middle. Definitely Jacksonville, moved the pocket. There was no pass rush. So, it was just, when you give up 44 points to Blake Bortles, it's unlikely that you did very much, positive. And that is the case here. They just had numerous, coverage breakdowns, just all sorts of things. As I said, they hit for the cycle, you name it. It was all there. It's a nightmare performance.
Mike Tomlin's been, obviously the Steelers' last trip over to London didn't go well either against the Vikings there. And the Jaguars, obviously, that's their home away from home over there. What's the narrative right now in Baltimore about John Harbaugh didn't have his team prepared for the trip to London? How much of that's going on? How much do you buy into it?
As it was happening, I didn't buy much into it because, they were over there. It's pro football. The ancillary stuff like that, I always have sort of a doubt about. But it could, as it turned out, and just watching that game, the Ravens definitely were not, as Harbaugh said yesterday, I did not even recognize my team, and I would agree with that. And you could watch the first 5 minutes, you could say, boy, they are sluggish. It looks like they just got off the plane, and something was not right, so they were not prepared. I don't know. I cannot answer whether, the fact is the Jaguars are more comfortable doing that stuff. They are. They did it last year. They did it the year before. They've won in London the last 3 years. So I think there may be a little bit of something to that, that they just go year after year. They've got a routine down. They stay in the same hotel. They understand everything. It was all new to the Ravens. And believe me, the last thing I'm doing is making an excuse. That there are no excuses for what happened in that game. Whatever unique circumstances they dealt with, it cannot explain 44-0 to Jacksonville in the third quarter. So, there is no excuse, but, I'll say this. It probably didn't help. It didn't help, and maybe Jacksonville did have a little bit of an edge there. But, in no way, shape, or form take that as an explanation for what happened.
John, we know how talented the Ravens are in the special teams area. Campanaro is a guy who has done some damage to the Steelers in the past. Is he going to be involved in the punt return game? And what will we see in the kick return game, if there is one?
The kick return, there are no more kick returns, right? So, that's really becoming an irrelevant position. Campanaro, yes, he's the punt returner. He hasn't really done too much yet. They like him back there. He's solid. He's good decision making, and he's got great hands. And you're right. He is a playmaker. The issue here for years has been his health. He's always hurt.
Sure.
Whenever he's been on the field, he's been a playmaker. He was out. He broke his back basically scoring a touchdown against the Steelers in Pittsburgh.
Right.
So He's a playmaker that is, they're trying to get him the ball more and more. That's definitely a guy to watch in the offense, especially with Danny Woodhead out.
All right. So, both teams coming off very disappointing road games, a divisional game. It looks like these two teams are the class of the division. What are you looking for in this one?
boy, interesting game because of those circumstances. I mean, it's desperate times really for the Ravens. I mean, you just cannot, you coming off that game, you just have to. I mean, both losses are bad. I certainly didn't see the Steelers losing in Chicago to the Bears. I thought the Bears played a really good game. I watched it. I mean, you know, they looked pretty hungry, but you know, it is a really interesting sort of tough game. I mean, another ancillary thing to throw in, you know, the Ravens, you know, they passed on the bye coming off London because of teams almost always take it, but they didn't want to do it because they want the bye later in the year, the normal time when they feel they'll need it more. So
interesting.
I think they're only the second team to do that. And so we'll see whether they get their legs back. So generally speaking, with absent stuff like that, you know, I don't know that it's a great week to be playing the Ravens at home because I think they're going to be pretty focused and pretty embarrassed about what happened.
All right, you have an early score for us. You don't want to go there yet or no?
Oh, I'll go there. I'll always go there.
Let's see.
So let's say these games are always close. I'd say a few fewer points in that game on Christmas last year. I think the Ravens, like I said, I think this is a week, boy. They really need this game. Both need it. But I'll say the Ravens at home by 23-20.
All right, and the Steelers are 0-4 in their last four trips to Baltimore as well. Yeah. Charlie Batch, the last quarterback to win in Baltimore. that's pretty amazing.
Oh, man. Yeah,
that is.
Well, they're due. They are due. They lost to Ryan Mallett 1 year, too, so that wasn't great.
Well, we always appreciate your time and the great insights, and appreciate you making some time for us with our scheduling conflicts and doing this with us on a Tuesday. Thanks so much.
No problem. Always happy to come on.
All right. You can check him out on Twitter at @BMoreEisenberg for all the latest updates, the injury news, and everything going on with the Ravens this week. John Eisenberg. Okay, Dave, good stuff from John, as always. Again, you know, hopefully we're past the we're not going to be past it, but our conversation going forward will be much more focused on football. We'll get into things on Friday. We'll look at what happens on the Thursday night game. We'll have our picks for the week. We'll have a much clearer picture of the injury report, which we don't really have any picture at all right now, to be honest with you. We'll have had two injury reports and a sense of things from there. Both coordinators will have spoken, so we'll have a lot to get to on Friday.
Absolutely, and I can't wait. You know, glad to be back talking football again. Looking forward to this game. A big game for both these teams, and it'll be good. Like John said, it's going to be interesting to see which one of these teams can overcome what they went through in week three. Rest assured, barring a tie, we're going to have an 0-4 team in the AFC North. We're going to have a 1-3 team in the AFC North. We're going to have 1-3-1 team and 1-2-2 team. So a whole bunch of different flavors there in the AFC North after this week, and the Steelers would be wise to capture this one after dropping that one against the Bears last week. In the meantime, if you got any nasty tweets for us or want to say hi or whatnot, look, we've received as many probably good tweets, positive tweets, as we have negative, and the same with emails too. So and look, we, you know, if you want to voice your opinion, you want to tell us to stick to sports or whatever, go ahead. At Steelers Depot for me, for David Todd, it's at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, you can go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button. Upper right navigational bar. And David, good job today. I enjoy these, and hopefully nothing but football on Friday.
All right. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.